Welcome to the EMS on the Mountain podcast, a show for those interested in austere and wilderness medicine. This podcast provides insight into the unique aspects and challenges of bringing modern EMS into wilderness and austere environments. So, welcome back, my friends, to another episode of EMS on the Mountain with Mike and Sean. So if you can't tell, I'm Batman, and it's because I have the SARS-CoV-2 COVID-19 virus, and it has been kicking my ass for the better part of a week now. So if I sound like ass tonight, I at least have a reason, as I sit in quarantine and do a podcast.
Yeah. If you used to ride a truck back in 2020, you remember when you got told you had to sit in a room for 14 days alone from everyone else with tape on the doors and all that good stuff? Sean's doing that right now.
Yeah, not really, man. I'm getting tired. But the wife is nothing if not thorough to keep the rest of the household isolated. All right. So with all that being said,
let's do tonight, this.
Or today, whatever we are, we're bringing you, this is part three of what was initially planned as a three-part series on some basic planning stuff. And tonight we're going to be talking about med clinics, so medical clinics, not necessarily expedition support. Those are pretty well wrapped up in the other two, if you think about it. This one deals a little bit more with actual providing a medical clinic, and this could be in support of an expedition. This could be at any number. This could be for a Boy Scout summer jamboree event, or you're maybe going to lower income, poorly served communities within your own country. A lot of these usually go overseas. Most people think of, you know, like Africa, South America, places like that. So a few caveats, right? Just like the previous two episodes. Again, this is not the end-all, be-all to the planning stuff. This is just one quick take. And there's not a lot to this that hasn't already been discussed before. We're just going to talk maybe about a couple of nuances that may or may not apply here. So it's a bit of an amalgam from the previous two. Elements of both will definitely apply here. And just going to add a little additional food for thought. Just some things for you to consider. If you ever find yourself supporting, or maybe you've been asked or tasked to help run an austere type of medical clinic. So one main item here, if it's already been spinning through your head while you're listening to this, the paramedic is almost always in support of doctors and nurses, dentists, et cetera, other folks on one of these types of events. Very seldom are they run solely by paramedic level practitioners. That's not to say it can't happen. It's just normally you're in support of a much more, when I say robust, don't think necessarily size and things, but you're going to be dealing with a much bigger, more well-rounded medical team as far as types and qualifications of the clinicians. So as you listen to this, we're going to talk about like, hey, if you're doing this stuff and this, it might not actually be you, right? You might be supporting some of the planning, but the one thing you need to do is be aware of the planning that is going on. And if there's something within your wheelhouse, your expertise, and if you are a wilderness paramedic, whether you're a WPC or you're just a paramedic who actually does wilderness medicine and you don't have a piece of paper that says so, you might bring some level of expertise to the discussion that other folks might not be considered, right? So like you might be getting with a couple of good doctors and their nurse friends who want to go and do this mission support, just, you know, provide some limited medical care to someplace, right? But you might not have a lot of knowledge in working in an austere environment. And you might have to bring some of that experience that you should have, hopefully have, to that discussion. So with that, we're going to start off. Number one, of course, mission analysis. So what is the goal of the clinic, right? This obviously helps frame all the rest of the discussion. Is this in a, I kind of use this expedition, although expedition medical support is definitely different from this. Though again, event support could fall into this. Like you might be asked, a lot of larger organizations have set up for like their summer camps and things like small medical clinics. And a lot of times those might be staffed just by paramedics and EMTs. You might have a nurse practitioner there with you. But normally when we think of this, think an actual medical type clinic setting up essentially like an urgent care in the field in tents, right? So again, how long and how big is this event? Or is this going to be 5 days? Is this going to be a six-month endeavor where you've linked up with some very large international type organization that's going in someplace and you might not be there for 6 months. You might rotate in for a 2-week stint, a 30-day stint, maybe longer. But how big and how long, right? And how big, not just in numbers of the team that's going, how many of these, how many people do you anticipate seeing in your clinic? And obviously that plays into how much and what type of supplies, right? So if we're going to be doing, I don't know, whatever the goal is, we're going to be fitting people for shoes, but we're going to at the same time be looking at orthopedic injuries. You know, this place maybe has a lot of issues with minor orthopedic injuries because everybody runs around barefoot and keeps getting stabbed by thorns. I don't know.
Like where your head's at.
You know, you're gonna need a lot of bandaging materials. You're gonna need some splinting materials. Who knows what you're gonna need, right? Just examples, random stuff thrown out of my fever-addled mind right now. So again, medical mission work in the low resource areas. Again, that's primarily the focus of this discussion. Same thing, right? Where is this gonna be at? Is this gonna be within your home country, just in an underserved community somewhere? And you'll see, you know, a lot of guys listen to this might be like, what? People do these and say, yeah, actually, in the U.S.
They do actually happen.
These medical clinics pop up in underserved communities all around the U.S. all the time, right? Very remote places. Oh, just think about Alaska. Sometimes there might be a clinic that pops up twice a year just where the locals can come in and see doctors, see dentists, et cetera, that otherwise might take them hours and hours to get to the most local town for them to get seen for something. So sometimes this is the only time people get seen for this. And then if you think the Deep South, some of these very, very rural country communities, same thing. They don't have large hospitals near them. You know, they might not have that local urgent care type emergent facility just to go to just when they get a cold, right? So these things that go on. And if you think about too, a lot of inner city places do this with like the homeless population. A lot of times they'll run health clinics to help treat some of the injuries and illness that these folks who are living on the streets deal with, because obviously they're not getting seen on the regular, except for the occasional 911 ambulance trip, right? So where are you going, right? How long is it going to be? What clinical skills and goals will be needed, right? So is this clinic going to be offering dental exams, minor dental work? It's out of the scope of the paramedic, even for us wilderness austere guys. It's like, I can take some Dentemp and I can pack in your filling that fell out, but I'm not doing real work, right? So you're going to need actual dentists, dental hygienists, and things like that, depending on what you're going to be doing. Same thing with like physicians and nurses and such, right? All right. So with all that, that kind of brings us into the next part that's going to kind of be fed off of that first one. So some of the common clinic duties and responsibilities. A lot of times you as the paramedic, the treatment of minor injuries and illness, you might be there as part of a triage, right? Trying to determine who needs to be seen now, who can wait, who can sit around. You might be tasked with the treatment of, you know, pretty much all the minor injuries. Like anybody comes in with minor lacerations, or even depending on where you're at and where you're working with, you might be handed some bigger stuff, like kind of like, especially if you're operating overseas, some of the rules on scope of practice kind of get to go out the window, and you might be doing a little bit of minor suturing. You never know. The triage is a big one. You know, those paramedics, if nothing else, we can at least do good sets of vitals, get a good basic assessment, determine, hey, is this person, should it really kind of be pushed to the front line to see the doc now? Or can they kind of hang out with the rest of them and tell them to catch a spot in the shade and we'll get to you when we can? And FYI, you're on mute. So we'll let Mike figure that out in a minute. There you go. Are you back?
Yeah, technology is hard for me, dude. I was just going to say the really wet cough, right? The oh, that dude might actually be really sick. Like determining that stuff's pretty common. Also, all of the cases of syphilis, every place I've ever heard of any sort of work, all the syphilis, all the ickies that come with that sort of thing, that's always a paramedic level problem. It's kind of like poop. Poop is always a nursing thing. It doesn't matter when it happened or how it happened. Uh-huh. It is not a paramedic level skill. When you're doing clinics, all of the open sores on some dude's wang, that is definitely a paramedic problem. That is not a nurse practitioner or a doctor's issue. I guarantee it.
No, that's... And having participated in helping and supporting some of these things, like when I was in the military, right? These used to be very common events when you're the military's deployed overseas. You do all these local, not military, but medical and dental clinics for these countries, right? And oh yeah, right. I was a young ENTI back in the day, and I got to, everybody else like, hey, you have to either go help support this thing or you can go paint an orphanage or whatever. I like the medical stuff. So I'd volunteer to go on these things. And it's like, and then when you're just the jarhead going to the medical thing, they're like, why are you here? It's like, oh, well, EMT and this and that. And your corpsman would be like, oh no, he's cool. He can work with me. And it's like, okay, great. Hey, guess what? You get to clean out all day long, right? All those all nasty long. Wounds, right?
The infected wounds.
So, yep. And part of that's like, yeah, sweet. Give it to that guy. He'll enjoy it. You want to complain with us? So aside from that, you might also be helping to arrange for evacuation, because this is a thing that not a lot of doctors have to deal with, but paramedics routinely deal with, both on the wilderness and the urban side, right? You're kind of used to what resources are available. Do I need to get like HEMS based helicopter crews coming in for evacuation for critical patients, et cetera. So again, it kind of goes into the triage piece, but you might be part of that arranging for other evacuation things, right? Just based on the training you've got, right? So most places require pre-hospital EMS clinicians to have all their foundational ICS certs in the US, you know, the incident command system, right? And they're all the foundational certificates or courses you got to take, but they give you an idea on how some of these things should operate, where most physicians don't have those things, right? It's not that you're operating in the ICS environment, but arranging transportation stuff could be well within your bailiwick and something you have experience with.
Well, I mean, let's be perfectly honest. Every doctor that is coming to work in one of these clinics out of a moral drive to do so, or public service for that DUI they got, or whatever the case may be, right? Their experience for their entire duration of their career has mostly been, hey, Nurse Steve, or hey, Nurse Practitioner Nancy, let's go ahead and get this guy out of here on a helicopter because he's pretty jacked up. Like, that is, it's just not their skill set. It's not a shot at them. It's just,
oh yeah, certainly not.
Coordinating transportation of things is not typically a doctor problem, right? And it turns out that we're pretty good at triaging and working in a relatively resource limited world and making decisions about these things. And that's a skill set we've got. So they bank on it. Pretty common. Yeah.
I'm not going to try and learn all the doctor things and be able to diagnose patients with some of these obscure illnesses, right? So, yeah, no slight against
doctors. That's paramedic school, dude.
Well, that's right. Come on, man. ACLS is a challenge every 2 years, dog. So some other stuff, right? General education of event participants. Now, this might be because you might have some folks coming along on this who are, we'll call it more of an, who are there to help support with, you know, actually managing financials or local contracting, procuring trucks and buses, or getting locals
helicopters,
tents and stuff. Yeah, right. So there's any number of other administrative functions that are going to be going on that's not just the medical staff that's doing a lot of this stuff. So you might be helping provide some general education for some of these other participants, right? That might be some basic first aid. Maybe it's CPR, right? Like, you have somebody that's going to go in and code. You can't just necessarily use all the medical people that are there to do this with, right? Just especially for like compressions or maybe work in the bag. You never know, right? So you might be providing just some general education for some of the other participants. This is a common one, right? Management of general health activities. So some of these include hygiene, right? So of all the participants there, now you're not going to be able to do much for the folks coming in to be seen, right? But a lot of times the young paramedic, EMT might involve a nursing staff, depending on how many people you have. But general hygiene, like making sure people are washing their hands. Are your cooking areas well separated from where your bathroom facilities are and your living areas, et cetera, right? So you're trying to keep the spread of any disease or illness down to a minimum. Again, I'm quarantined here in the house for the exact same reason, right? So that might fall on you. Yeah, I'm pretty nasty. True. Right. Same thing, like bathroom facilities, right? So that's often, if you're in the military, whose job is setting up where you're going to dig your holes, it's your platoon's medic, platoon corpsman, et cetera, right? He's responsible for making sure you dirty, filthy infantry guys are washing your hands, trying to prevent the spread of disease. You as the paramedic might also be doing that. You get to crack the whip, say, hey, nasty, did you wash your hands before you came to lunch today? Get out there, right? Same thing, inspecting cooking and food prep to help make sure people are also washing their hands, cleaning their food prep equipment, making sure the food prep areas are clean and wiped down. You know, if somebody just finished chopping up a bunch of raw chicken over on the counter, you want to make sure that thing got properly washed and cleaned and dried before you put other things back down on that, just to help prevent possible funky outbreaks. And
you're talking about the counter, right? Not the chicken.
Oh yeah. Both.
Understood. You don't want to lay your medical tools on top of the chicken until it's been cleaned and dried, right?
Exactly, right? And then tied right in that is water purification. So again, making sure water purification, if it's necessary, is being done properly. People are doing the right things. Are they using, what is your technique? Are you bringing in just cases of bottled water, which is obviously the most convenient, but not necessarily the easiest thing to do, depending on where you're at, right? So you might actually have to be from the local stream, bringing up containers, gallon, 5-gallon containers, and then having to actually conduct water purification stuff through that, whether that's a pump filter, gravity filters, dropping in bleach, iodine, other filtration tablets and liquids, et cetera, right? So you might be part of the team that's making sure that that is all done properly. Again, not the end all be all list, but these are common things that you might find yourself doing. Or if nobody else is doing it, you know it's a problem, you might want to volunteer to get yourself in there because the disease you prevent might be the one that infects you. With that, what do we got now?
So let's talk a little bit about some of the specialized things that paramedics are pretty capable of doing. One of these is, I'm going to harken back to the COVIDs here in a minute, but there are a lot of things that, especially overseas events or natural disaster sort of responses, that paramedics end up helping with quite a bit that are not what I would call a normal paramedic day-to-day 911 response or interfacility transport sort of thing. First and foremost, participant health issues, right? Somebody typically has to be there to take care of the people that are taking care of the people. And oftentimes, it is not completely uncommon to have a separated sort of procedure and process for the health and wellness of the individuals that are on the mission, A, to make sure that they get taken care of absolutely as quickly as humanly possible, and B, to make sure that if there is anything going on that could be related to any care they've provided to folks there, that they are properly treated and then quickly expedited to whatever exfiltration process is available to get folks back to the States. If it turns out you're like, I don't know, treating an outbreak of malaria, and then you come down with symptoms that say, hey, this dude might have malaria. Like, you typically, as a person working these sort of missions, you don't get put into the general pop of everyone else in that place that's got malaria. Like, you end up in a different triage process. So that's often something that a paramedic will be asked to handle and make sure it's taken care of. We talked about this a little bit, but examinations and treatment to the local populace. These are the folks that are being treated by this event. The paramedics actually are allowed to do a lot of things, especially when absolute rules of engagement on written protocols and such that are followed in EMS systems are slightly, I'll call it, less stringent, largely because the doctor who is giving you the orders to do the thing is like standing right there like, hey, let me show you how to suture. Cool. Did you follow along? Did you record this? Because I got to go do this other thing over here. Like, you go ahead and finish sewing up this 12-year-old's leg, right? That's pretty common. I've actually seen places where administration of vaccines is a real common thing.
Say the COVID vaccine?
Yeah, COVID vaccines, dental exams. I have no idea how to do dental exams other than the, oh, you ate something with your face that you shouldn't have because you fell off a motorcycle and I've noticed your teeth are missing. Or the proverbial, that looks like a skull fracture, we should probably fly you, sort of dental exam. But it is not a super hard thing to do, and it is not uncommon for paramedics to be asked to assist in the process of initial triaging of like dental problems for folks that just have less than American, or I'll call it westernized, dental care in general. It's pretty easy to poke at things and see if it hurts and where the cavity is. You're probably not going to be the one fixing it, but you can certainly help in the triaging of these things. And some limited surgical interventions. I don't want to go down this deep, dark rabbit hole, especially for our four-year paramedics that think they can do like field surgery and thoracostomy everyone because they're experts in the world. But it isn't hard to learn to like lance things and weep wounds and suture when you're done and irrigate and clean. It's just, we don't do a lot of that in a standard paramedic practice, right? We're not the ones that are debriding wounds and such. But if you've been taught to do it and the folks you're working with are like, hey, he's not done. Like, it's pretty easy. Like, you get the sterile water, you get some soap in there, you clean it out, you make sure it's all of the stuff we introduced is out of the wound. You sterilize it a bit and then you sew it the heck up, right? I mean, it's not the end of the world. So that is something you could be asked to do.
Yeah, no, and I think a good example in there too is just daily wound cleaning, wound packing, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody might've come in a couple of days before and the doc wants them to come back, you know, in a few days just to take a look and see how things are after they did a little work. Yeah, that might be your gig. Hey, let's unwrap this. Let's take a look. And then that, man, that's definitely going to be you. You know, you're going to clean it out, redo it, and off you go, right? So that's not that that's yep. falls under really surgical work, but it's usually not in the pre-hospital world. That's not something we do.
If I can be trusted to use a wound vac, to pull the wound vac stuff, I don't even know what it's called, like the vacuum, like spongy material, can't really think of it right now, to pull that out of somebody and change it and then reattach the wound vac in a hospital in the U.S., I can certainly like
let
the goo fall out of the wound and roll. And I haven't asked to do that multiple times, so it's really gross. That is like, that's my thing right there. Yeah, not my jam.
I've got some stories I'll tell you one day.
Yeah. And then ultimately, it turns out, believe it or not, all those hours spent in paramedic school make you reasonably knowledgeable in basic human pathophysiology and like how to stay healthy. Plus, just turns out that if you graduated high school, you probably know how to not get certain diseases, like wash your hands and don't wipe your ass with
the Tide Pod challenge.
Good point. I take everything back that I just said. Americans are stupid. Yeah. Our children are going, because it turns out eating Tide Pods is going to kill you. But education, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we're not, these types of missions are not just about doing the stuff. We often think about that in medicine. I could make the corollary for 911 response too, right?
Absolutely.
Our job is also to provide education and be helpful. And that can be the gig. All right. Enough talking about what you're going to do. Let's talk about like who should be there. These are just some common roles that would be filled on the team. My experience is they can vary widely, but these are different roles you will typically see in a team that is tasked with performing these sorts of missions. First off, you're going to have a bunch of people around you that are probably out of their element as much as you are if this is the first time you're doing it. You're going to have doctors, you know, physicians, nurses, paramedics, EMTs, corpsmen, whoever may be with you, right? That's kind of the root of doing a medical mission, right? You got to bring medical providers, but they don't have all the skills. Oftentimes, you might see dentists, ear, nose, and throat specialists, I guess mental health professionals, specialists much, might like that's a common thing too.
Epidemiologist, right? You know, and then toxicologist, depends on where you're going, what you're trying to do, right? So people that are, you know, you're one of these crazy countries that's just, it's got all the cool tropical diseases. You might want a specialist in those things there with you to help diagnose and provide proper treatment, right? Because let's say a general emergency physician or general practitioner can't get it done, but the specialist, when it comes to those things, he's going to be like, oh, yeah, no, this is what we got. This is what we need to put him on. No, that might kill him. You got to use this instead. So, yeah, bring in some of those other specialists is key, if available, right? Obviously, I mean, you don't get to choose this unless you're in charge, in which case the paramedic going out and interviewing different doctors and their physician friends, like, hey, want to come do something fun? I'm in charge of this.
Yeah, let me know how that's working out for you. Yeah.
Right? Like so again, you're usually part of that team. You're not doing the team selection piece, but these are just people that you might have out there with you. And if you are an experienced wellness, austere medical provider, as a paramedic, you might recommend like, hey, have you guys thought about trying to find an epidemiologist, somebody that's familiar with the diseases in this region we're going to? That could be really beneficial. And another doc might go, ooh, yeah, snap. My good friend, Steve, he'd be into this. And next thing you know, you got a qualified guy that's ready to come on that.
Steve's down. Let's do this. Yeah. There's also a pile of what I would call non-medical folks that are like, your team is going to grow pretty quickly. I promise you. You're going to end up with translators, local guides, local liaison. You might have someone that's just there to answer questions for the tribal elders or whoever. Like, it all depends on where you are. But you're going to have all kinds of local support folks as well, logistical folks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, it is not going to be a you and a doctor going out and doing stuff. That is typically not how this works. It's usually a team of 12 to 15 providers plus their support personnel, plus the logistics folks, plus the local populace that's part of the mission. It can be 25, 30 people easy for a small team. So kind of depends on the mission, but it's going to have a lot of specialized people doing specialized jobs. And we should keep in mind, and this is certainly something a paramedic should keep in mind both for themselves and as a member of the team. Not everybody is going to crush this health situation, right? You've got to be willing to live in less than ideal conditions sometimes, but you've also got to be healthy enough to live in those non-ideal conditions and not end up with diseases that are going to kill you too, or tired or broken legs or sprained ankles. What I'm trying to say is like fitness does matter, and being fit is part of the criteria. But on top of that, vaccinations. I mean, Sean mentioned earlier he was in the military. I can only imagine the number of chemicals flying through your body making you a bionic man right now.
You're still bionic. But, I've been laid out for a week.
I mean, I was when I was 6, 7 years old, my dad's job was actually to send him to Egypt. And the number of jabs that my little sister and I got in preparation for that trip, like it was, I think we had to go like 3 different times and get 2 or 3 shots each time. Like it was a ton of crap that I got vaccinated for that I probably wouldn't have if I had been just stayed in the US, so to speak. Turns out we never went, but that's not the point. We got all the vaccines. You have to be willing to, A, get all the vaccines, make sure that the folks on the team have gotten the vaccines, and that they're done in a timely manner. So if there's any adverse effects, you kind of know. You don't want to be fighting some vaccine complication a day or two before the event. Okay. And then finally, it's probably worth note, and we could maybe do a whole podcast about this. Probably not. Because if you get me talking about gear, I'm going to go for days.
Well, but there is a whole ask to do more gear talk. So,
all right. Well, maybe I'll write up a whole podcast on like the type of gear and what I like and what I don't like and how you should pack for a mission versus an expedition versus a alpine thing. But there's a bunch of gear selection, right? Just at a root level at personal gear, I'm not a big fan of regular old clothes. Like you're going to be looking at, I call them like the travel clothes, right? You're going to hit the REIs. You're going to be looking for, I'm going on safari. I want to look like I'm headed to wherever in an REI catalog, but that's actually like the best attire for the job most of the time. And then clinically, you're going to be bringing around a lot of equipment, right? I mean, I can only imagine the number of things that end up going like ultrasounds and, all the latest whiz bang toys, all of the power to supply them, all of the means to charge the things if necessary. This is all equipment that ends up getting packed up and brought along for the party. So, it's not just, I'm saying that not only in the picking your own gear, but also the doing one of these is not just about showing up and doing clinical work. Like there's typically a lot of setup, tear down, and moving crap around that is required as part of doing one of these sorts of missions. And being able to pull your weight and be useful in that space matters as well.
Yeah.
Is that a nice enough way of summing it up? Like,
I think so. All right.
Yeah.
I think it's a good transition. Now we're going to talk now with some of the, what we'll call administrative and logistics requirements, right? A little military parlance for folks.
Ooh.
So again, a lot of that is going to be determined by your location and duration, right? So how much water are we doing? Yeah. Are we doing that cases of water thing? Are we having meals brought in? Are we eating freeze-dried meals, pre-prepared meals? The dirty three-letter one, right?
Mm.
3 days of food is different than 3 weeks of food, which is different than 3 months, right? Same thing with water. If you're in a hot environment, you're in a cold environment. For those that don't know, you still need to be hydrated, even if it's cold. Water is no joke. Yeah, I know, weird, right?
Hark, I say.
We're not going to harp on that too much, right? And again, same thing, minimum gear, your team and personal gear. You need to know, here's the big one here. Who's providing what? Like if they say, hey, Mike, you're coming along as a paramedic in support of this clinic. There'll be one other paramedic, and you just need to bring your personal patient assessment materials. Cool. What does that mean? Like, do I have to bring my own BP cuff, or does that just pretty much mean a pen light, my stethoscope, and a notepad? What exactly does that mean? What is being provided, and what are you expected to bring on your own? I would not want to bring a whole lot of stuff of my own. Necessarily. Mm. It's not that I don't own most of these things, but the condition it's going to get used and abused in is like, okay, cool, but this is mine and nobody else gets to touch it. And yeah, I'm going to be that selfish dude, but
yeah,
this is not going to walk away on me. Right. So it's like,
yep.
Anybody that's ever owned a good Littmann stethoscope knows that if you don't have your name on it, and even that doesn't really matter, if you don't keep control of it all the time, it goes away. Somebody's going to acquire it eventually. So
you're not wrong, son. You're not wrong.
And again, just like we discussed in previous episode, your logic, where are you going to be staying? I like to put it hammocks or hotels. So you're going to be staying in tents out in the middle of the field. Are you going out during the day? You're going to drive out via truck somewhere, set up your little remote clinic. Do you work for 8, 10, 12 hours, get back in your trucks, go back to a hotel? eat dinner, go to bed, sleep in a bed, air conditioning, et cetera, wake up the next day and repeat? Or are you actually going to be in the austere environment near one of these villages or small towns, wherever it is, literally sleeping in a tent or in a hammock, as my preference would be? You need to know that. And then, of course, is who's providing what? Do I need to bring my own sleeping bag? Do I need to provide my own hammock, own tent, et cetera, right?
Yeah. We can always share a sleeping bag, Sean. That's fine.
Oh, yeah, always. Food and water, we've already talked about quite a bit. Key leadership, right? This is definitely who's in charge of what and when, right? Like we talked about, while this is primarily a medical mission, the doctor will be in charge of all the medical things, right? But you might actually have the expedition or the trip leader who's kind of in charge of all of it. And so you need to understand the difference between the two, right? One guy can tell you to go clean that wound. The other guy can't. Well, he can ask you to, but you could tell him to go, you know, pound sand. But you need to know who it is. You need to know who you're talking to, what methods you're going to talk to him. Like, right. So are the only people going out to the field? Like, say you're doing one of these in and out of the field things, right? You're staying in local hotels or something, but in and out of there daily. Who's going with you? Is like that trip leader going out every day? Or is that individual kind of staying back and kind of running the show from their headquarters thing back at that rear area? And if so, how are you talking to them? Cell phones, radios, et cetera. How do you get information passed? Because there could be a lot of different information requirements that need to go back and forth. You just need to know who the key leadership is, who you're talking to about it. Like, say you have a patient you've done on your triage where you're like, oh, snap. Hey, doc, this dude is stupid sick, super septic. This guy really needs to get transported immediately to a real hospital. This is, we're not going to do anything for him here. Who are you calling to arrange for that piece, right? So if you might be, maybe you were assigned as that in-between liaison to coordinate some of that, that's great. But you need to know who back with your rear party team or local counterpart are you talking to get that going, et cetera, right? So again, stuff we've already talked about, just think about it. So again, we've mentioned this previously in the other ones, detailed medical analysis, information gathering. What are your local resources? Are there local hospitals? If there are, you're probably not going to that area. Kind of defeats the purpose of some of these missions, right? But
okay, sir.
Where is the closest one? Should you need to transport somebody there? And what are their capabilities? How do you access them? How do you contact them, et cetera? Are there other local medical concerns that not just you, but the entire team need to be aware of, right? The active diseases, viruses, et cetera. Like, is this one of those strong dengue, Zika, malaria regions that you need to be very aware of so that you can make sure you take your prophylaxis seriously so that you don't get one of these lovely tropical diseases? Know what's going on.
I always take my prophylaxis seriously.
Oh. No, you don't. Look at you.
No.
He's a liar. Big one with that, wildlife. Snakes, spiders, crocodiles, mosquitoes, all those things, right? All the vectors that bring the disease, you need to know what they are. When are they active? Some are active in the morning, some in the evenings, some midday, not very often, usually morning and evening kind of thing with a lot of them. I put crocodiles in there, people laugh, but I've got so many stories about Australia, about like stay away from there. The saltwater crocs will come and murder you.
They will eat you? Yeah, it's...
Yeah, it's great stories, right? And then snakes and spiders, because those are everybody's favorites. But those things are out there, right? And then if you can identify, if you know what the poisonous ones are, which ones to be truly concerned about and which ones are like, I don't want to get bit by that thing. But like generally, like tarantulas, everybody's scared of the big hairy spider. It's not so bad, but you get a good brown recluse bite and you're starting to kill tissue. And that's just a whole thing, right? So
yeah, that's a party. You're not going to debrate that away.
And of course, the various snakes that are out there. There are some extremely venomous snakes overseas. In the U.S., we're lucky. We have essentially two types, coral snakes and rattlesnakes, right? Mm-hmm. And neither of which, in the grand scheme of things, not to say that they don't both cause issues every year, but in the grand scheme of things across the world, these are very minor inconveniences, right? And lastly, for this piece, your environmentals, right? What's the weather going to be while you're there? It's going to help determine what you need to pack personally. I don't ever recommend shorts in some of these environments, right? Always long pants, ideally a long sleeve shirt, right? If nothing else, not just to stave off the attack of mosquitoes and such, but sun can be a real thing, right? Are you going to be at altitude? If so, what altitude? Like you could be hanging out at 10,000, which is different than hanging out at 14 or 5. Or maybe you're at sea level, right? And again, just like with the wildlife, think about plants as well. Don't touch that green thing, right? If you've ever known me and talked to me and things like poison ivy, poison oak, we do not get along, right? I am not hypersensitive, but very sensitive to both of those, and I avoid them like the plague. So if there are other similar plants that are out there, whether they have serious toxicological, that's my paramedic word of the day, toxicological type concerns, or is it just really going to cause you a rash and some irritation, right? So know what they are. So that, and again, this might go into that education piece, not just for you, like to you be aware of them so that you avoid them, but you might be tasked with training and teaching your fellow trip members on what some of these things are. Because again, as Mike mentioned before, you might be helping to maintain or monitor at least daily health of your teammates and help prevent you having work in that arena as well by keeping folks away from these things.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to know about the stuff in the place that you're going. You don't get to show up and be like, oh, I heard there's snakes here. Like, that's probably not how, if you're the one there to do the helping, you should probably know these things. All right. So a few other things to consider. First off, this may sound silly, but you got to kind of do a risk analysis and plan for all the random eventualities. Like, if you're going to a place where it turns out you might get eaten by a croc, like, you should probably have an insurance policy that doesn't have like a croc exception, but understand the risk that you're going into and plan for it, right? Not every mission is going to be okay for everyone. Also, I will say that everyone has their own threshold of things that they will tolerate. I know guys that have been like, oh yeah, dude, I'm going. And then they get blown up in a clinic once. And now they're like, yeah, I'm kind of done with war zones. Well, they kind of got their bell rung. That happens to people. Like, they will still go do all sorts of other missions. But when it comes to any sort of combat zone, they're out because they were in a tent that got hit by a bomb. And it turns out they lived. And that can kind of, you know, change your perspective on things. And with getting blown up, security concerns, right? There's always the local security. I feel dumb saying this, but A, Tide Pods. And B, the number of people that probably don't really truly understand like this concept, or what I will call the traditional Western concept of the ability to just walk around and not get jacked up. Like, there are a lot of parts of the world where that ain't true. And you need to understand these things if you're going to go on a mission in a non-native Eastern, or Western style country. Like, there's always parts of the US where you see all the YouTubes and all the, what do they call it, TikToks, the kids these days with their Instagrams and whatnot. But the reality is that on whole, America is still a pretty safe place in general. That is not always the case in some of the places you're going, and you have to keep those things in mind and have a plan for it. If your team doesn't have one, maybe that's not the mission you should be going on.
Yeah.
There's oftentimes a lot of specialized medical equipment that come with these things, but it also includes things like drugs. I don't know of a whole lot of places that are like, yeah, we just go ahead and get our narcotics from the US and take them with us. A lot of times there is a hybrid level of sourcing material from both other nations if this is a larger endeavor. But you need to have plans for transporting medications, transporting medical equipment. Oftentimes this is a logistics thing, and the person doing that planning is not the first, it's not the first time they've ever done an international medical mission plan. Like, you don't, nobody's got like that looking for a fresh out of college expert in international medication transport, but it is a thing you have to care about.
Yeah.
These organizations that do it have pretty good plans for these things.
Yeah. And again, the narcotics is the big one, because there's a lot of, like, especially a lot of Asian nations. Mm-hmm. They, it doesn't matter if it's medical legitimate or not, you cannot bring like narcotics into their country, right?
Right.
Like, as a medical team, you can purchase them and acquire them in country in accordance with their law. But man, should your Pelican case get opened and there's fentanyl and morphine in there, whether it's transported what you thought was legally or not, So that's
enjoy that caning. Yeah.
This is, yeah, that's exactly right.
Oh, and then, you know, let's just make sure that we're not leaving out all the other specialty skill sets that you may also need. And oftentimes these are skill sets that are pulled together by a combination of experts and skills within the team. So I won't call it a common one, but a less, more often unthought about skill set is rope access, technical rescue. And I'm not just saying that because I know a thing or two about the ropes, right? I know the ropes are the ropes. But
I'm gonna get you a shirt now.
I can't believe I said that. I'm a level 3 instructor, sir. There's a whole bunch of things. Like I have a decent skill set and knowledge when it comes to rope rescue, wilderness rigging, vertical rescue, tree rescue, even caving, right? But I know enough on the slopes or in an alpine environment to not die myself, but I am not the guy that is going to be doing the absolute complex rigging. I understand the principles of how to do it, but I don't do it enough. Like I don't spend a lot of time on glaciated environments anymore. So I probably shouldn't be the expert in making sure that that load's going to hold. There's a lot of different skill sets in rope work or going into less permissive environments that you may need to have a number of different knowledgeable individuals on different skill sets within vertical rope work arenas.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we have to remember too that when we say rope access might not necessarily mean vertical.
That's true.
Just anywhere.
Could be horizontal.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like you mentioned, glacier travel. And I think that's one of your other notes. But are you, and again, this might go more on the expedition support side, right? Because very seldom we're going to run a medical mission that where we've got to cross glaciers per se. But yeah, it's like you fall in a crevasse. How familiar are you with getting yourself out of the crevasse, right? Yeah, like you said, I haven't had to do a crevasse rescue in, I don't know how long, right? So,
I mean, let's put it this way, Sean. If I were on a glacier right now. Well, no, I mean, if you fall in a crevasse and I'm at the top and I've planted my axes and dug in my toes and I'm just going to cut the rope because like, it's been so long. I don't need you, man. Like, been a good run, but I'm out.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Just and that's all right. So, okay.
So anyway, some other things that you may actually not, you'd be surprised. I mentioned glacial travel, overland travel in general, driving. Driving in some pretty crappy places is a skill set in and of its own, right? Who's the guy? Matt? Matt's off-road recovery, the guy that has a million followers on YouTube.
Yeah.
All he does is record videos of getting idiots out of bad ways in non-paved road environments. And it's actually quite entertaining. You should go watch him. But yeah, I mean, even the ability to do overland travel and expeditionary level driving, like that's a skill in and of itself. You may need that too. And then it turns out like paramedic, nurse, whoever, if you're going to be doing particular medical procedures, ultrasounds, EKGs, field blood tests, whatever the case may be, like you should probably know how to use that stuff and have people with you that know how to use it. Like four paramedics and an ultrasound doesn't make a useful human unless they've been taught to use an ultrasound.
And they remain proficient with it.
And they're
that one 4-hour class you did 2 years ago for CEs?
Yeah. No. Just for the record though, I found your stones. So
No, you didn't.
Just saying.
Because I never had any after that. So
I didn't. Yeah. So anyway, well, if you're bringing specialty equipment, you have to make sure you have people that know how to use the specialty equipment. And I know it sounds dumb for me to say it, but I've been in situations in my life where I've literally had people be like, "Hey, dude, we got this really cool widget. Does anybody know how to use it?" And it turns out nobody does.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, even simple things like satellite communications tools, sat phones. And all of that stuff, you should get it out of the box and play with it and know how to use it before you go. And then finally, it is definitely worth note that culture and a little bit of language of wherever you're going is an important thing to understand. You cannot ever forget the human element. And you're going into different environments that have different cultures and different values and different rule sets than you may be used to. And you need to make sure that you and the team are familiar with them and not inadvertently bucking the system, so to speak. You're there to help. You're not there to judge. Well, unless you are on some sort of turn everyone Christian sort of mission, that is typically not the goal of a medical expedition. And you need to be aware of how to keep your nose clean, so to speak, with other folks that may be offended by things that don't offend us. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think a good point with that one is culturally speaking, this again, obviously predominantly applies overseas. But it's, you're going there to do work for people. And if you offend the local culture community and they don't come to see you, you guys have wasted probably tens of thousands of dollars in preparing and traveling and such. So, do the right thing. And again, language, you're not going to learn some of these dialects like proficiently, but simple ones, please, thank you. How are you doing? How do you feel? You'll probably have some simple cards made up with a basic medical type stuff on them as well. So, don't get too wrapped up into that one. All right.
Don't put that in your mouth. That's a good one to learn.
All right. So that pretty well brings us to the end of this one, right? So, Jesus, a couple things in wrapping this one up. Just like we talked about back in the beginning, this is just general approach, food for thought. Again, this is more just to give you something to consider as a paramedic who might be involved in an operation like this. Okay. It might give you some things like, hey, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? I once heard this podcast where these two dudes who think they know what they're doing, but really don't, but people still listen to them anyways, mentioned this, and it sounded like a good idea if we thought about that.
Take it from what it is. He's talking about us, by the way, just so everyone's clear, he's talking about us.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I thought we got that, right? So when it comes to all this planning stuff, what are some resources folks can use? All right, so I'm going to throw out pretty much one resource, and it is the textbook by the good folks down south of the border, actually here from us, down in Guatemala. The RedMed guys, Rescue Expedition Disaster Medicine Guidebook, author, Mr. Chris Gibson, right? So RedMed also offers, they have their in-person classes now that post-COVID, but they also have the online module part of it. And I did the online module, all of it online, the components during COVID, just because we couldn't travel and I couldn't go do the course in person. But they provide you some excellent resources and templates for the planning, right? They have a medical response plan template. They have some general planning templates, and you get, I think, Word document, like editable templates that you can go back and use, as well as examples. So, and I think it's, the book itself is also an excellent book. And just as a side note, I think perusing the IBSC website last week, the RedMed course right now, I think, is the only current of your WPC credential. So good on Mr. Gibson and all that for getting that going early, right? I would hope to myself one day make it down to Guatemala. Or I know they do Everest Base Camp treks with their courses, and I hope to go do one of those in the future if I get a chance. But that's a great resource, folks. I got the textbook off of Amazon when it wasn't available when I took the course. It would have been fantastic if I'd had it available when I took the course, but I found it was back available. But I found it on Amazon. If it's still available via Amazon, we'll put that link in our socials so folks can find that book. But I would highly recommend that book as a general guideline for your planning needs. Lastly, key points, just like with all the rest of them, know what the mission is, identify what you need to support it, and you being the paramedic and what your duties and responsibilities might be, and then kind of develop your initial plan, see how that feeds into the general overall picture, and then adjust as necessary. And really, that's about all I got on this. If you got any questions for us, as usual, you know where to hit us up. But with that, Mike, you got anything?
No, man. I just checked on Amazon while you were talking, and it is available. So we'll drop that link in there. It is an excellent book. Big fan. All right. Well, I guess that's that.
If you have any questions or comments or ideas for show topics, you can send us an email at theshow@emsonthemountain.com or hit us up on social media. We can be found on Facebook and Instagram at EMS on the Mountain, Twitter at EMSOTM, or you can engage with us and a whole community of wilderness EMS professionals at locals.com/wilderness EMS.
Until the next episode, thanks for joining us. And until we see you on the mountain, train hard, be safe, and do good work.